Okay, we're beginning here, three lines down on Ein Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to query about the issue of whether Shmia is necessary for Hafarat Nedarim, or is Shmia Lav Davko. So we discussed that in general with regards to the Baal yesterday. And now the Gemara takes that one step further in the question, by Rami Bar Chama, Cheresh Mau Shefer Leishto. What is the din with regards to a Cheresh? Can he perform Hafarat for his wife? Now over here, you can look in the Rosh. The Rosh says over here that the Cheresh that we're speaking about here is Cheresh de Krok, Kohi Shemidaber Ve'enu Shumeya. The Cheresh that we're speaking about here is the Cheresh of the Pasuk, the one that is used in the Torah, the meaning of Cheresh in the Torah, which is someone that speaks but does not hear. But it's not the Cheresh of the Gemara or the Mishnah, which is someone who is Enu Midaber Ve'enu Shumeya. And the Rosh explains on the first white line there, Aval Cheresh de Rabbanan Birmiza Lo Matzvi Mafka Neder Deoraito. Because if he was a Cheresh in the sense of the way that the Mishnah and the Gemara use it, then you would actually have an individual who only can communicate through Rimiza, through signing or through indication. And that clearly is only a communication form that works Mide Rabbanan. On the other hand, he's trying to eliminate, nullify a neder that is chal mida oraita. So that would be a problematic type of release or hafara, and therefore that cannot be the explanation of the cheresh over here. Va'od shidino kishote. And in addition to that, a cheresh she'enu midaber ve'enu shumea is deemed to be an enu bardat. If he's enu bardat, he's a shute, then clearly he doesn't have the right or the ability to perform hafara over here. And the Ran seconds that the cheresh that we're speaking about here is a cheresh she'enu shumeya, but he is midaber. So with regards to his ability to be made for the neder, he has the ability to articulate and to be made for the neder through that articulation. On the other hand, he's lacking the shmiya. He's unable to hear about the neder. And that's the question that's being posed by Rami Bar Chama. And then he makes a statement. Im tim salomar bal mefer belo shmiya. If you want to conclude from what we said yesterday's Gemara, that the husband is able to be made for the neder even without hearing the neder or without the knowledge of the neder, mishom debar mishmahu. That's because he has the capacity, the ability to hear. Al cheresh delav bar mishmahu. On the other hand, the cheresh who does not have the capacity to hear, haynu de Rabbi Zeira. Then he fails here not because shmia is integral to the hafarat neder, but simply because he lacks the capacity for Shmia. And that is like what Rabbi Zeira says with regards to Menachot, the principle that we see that is brought up in many places in Shas. Dama Rabbi Zeira, kol haro'ui lebila, ein bila ma'akevet bo. Anything that has the ability to be mixed, that can be mixed, then even if it's not mixed, that is not ma'akev. B'chush ein ro'ui lebila. On the other hand, anything that does not have the capacity to be mixed, Bila me'akevet bo, then the Bila is problematic. The original statement of Rabbi Zeira is said in the Gemara in Menachot in relationship to what we know as Bula b'shemen. The regards to Menachot, there's a requirement that the Mincha be mixed with the Shemen. And all over the Torah, anytime it speaks about a Mincha that has oil in it, it says Bula b'shemen. It has to be mixed in the Shemen. The Mishnayot over there seem to indicate that Belila, that mixing of the shemen is not me'akev, that it's not something that is integral to the mincha, and therefore if you don't do it, then it would be fine. On the other hand, the Mishnah says that the maximum capacity of a mincha is 60 isaron, because beyond 60 isaron, you cannot mix it with the oil. You can't perform blila. So the Gemara doesn't understand. Either there is a requirement for blila, and that's why you can't go over 60 isaron in a single kli for a mincha, or there is no requirement of blila, and that's why the din is that if you're not bolel, if you do not mix it, that it's not makev, and the mincha is fine. So which one is it? You seem to have a stira on the Mishnayot. The answer to that is what Rabbi Zeira says over here, that with regards to lechatchilo, you should do blila, you should do the mixing. Bidiavad, if you didn't do the mixing, you didn't do the blila, then the mincha is kshera. But that presupposes that you can actually mix the mincha. As long as you have the capacity, the ability to mix the mincha, then that blila is not me'akev. You should do it. L'chatchila, you should perform it. It's a mitzvah to do it. But despite that fact, if you don't do it, b'diavad, you would say. But all assumes that there is this ability to do it. And that's why there's a limitation that no mincha can be greater than 60 yisaron. Because once it gets over 60 yisaron, there's no more any blila. Blila just doesn't work then. Since it doesn't work, if you don't do it, it is ma'akev. On the other hand, once you have less than 60 yisaron and you have the ability to do blila, if you do it, or you should do it because it is a mitzvah, but if you don't do it, it won't be ma'akev. So the suggestion of the Gemara over here is that the same is true here with regards to Shmia. That even though Shmia is not ma'akev the hafara, because over here we said Imtim Salomar, that we concluded that the husband does not need Shmia in order to hafara, but maybe that still should affect the Cheresh over here. Because the Cheresh, even though there's no requirement of Shmia in order to perform hafara, but the Cheresh over here is lacking in Shmia whatsoever. He has no capacity for Shmia. And maybe that should prevent him from having the ability to do the Hafarata Neder, even though Shmia in and of itself is not Ma'akev Hafarata Neder. O Dilma, or maybe the other side of this is Vishamaisha Lo Ma'akev, that the hearing of the husband is not Ma'akev, and that means Legamre. It's not Ma'akev. Shmia is not a necessity whatsoever. It's just talking about what the Ran said yesterday, Orcha de Milta. It's a normal way that Hafara would take place, but not to suggest that that's the only way that Hafara can take place. So over here, there are some questions that arise, and we'll pose some of the questions, we'll try to answer some of the questions, and we'll continue with the Gemara to discuss it further. The first question that you can ask over here is whether the principle of Rabbi Zeira is actually applicable in this case. Is the principle of Rabbi Zeira even meaningful in the case of Hafarat Nedarim versus Minachot? And that is because by the case of Mincha, there's a mitzvah to do Blila. There's a mitzvah to actually mix the item. Bidyavad, if you don't mix it, then your Yotzei or the Mincha is Kshera. So in that case, you can talk about the principle of Rabbi Zeira, which is, alright, if you can mix it, then it's not Ma'akev the Mincha, because there's a mitzvah to do this. On the other hand, if it's in a situation where it doesn't have the capacity or it's too big to do blila, it's ma'akev because there you don't have the ability to perform the mitzvah of blila. On the other hand, over here, with regards to hafara, there is no din of shmia. What we're saying here is that shmia is not necessary to do hafara, and there is no lechatchila to have shmia. There's no mitzvah to have shmia. So then why is the din of Rabbi Zeira even relevant in this situation? So that's one question that you have to ask here. Is the din of Rabbi Zeira at all relevant to our case? Number two question that you have to ask here is with regards to the Cheresh. Now, if you believe that Shmia is not necessary over here, which is what the Gemara is explaining, or even if you do suggest that Shmia is necessary, we saw yesterday, and that's the way the Ran interpreted the word Shmia, Shmia doesn't literally mean to hear. Shmia simply means to understand, to have knowledge of, to know about. Which is that he doesn't have to literally hear the nether. He just has to know about the nether that his wife took. So by a cheresh, the lack of shmia should not prevent him from having the ability to be made for the nether. Because hearing is not the key element. The key element here is not hearing, but rather knowledge or understanding or being aware of the fact that the nether is here. And the cheresh has the capacity to understand or to know that his wife has taken the nether. And therefore, why should the Shmia be ma'akev at all? To both of those questions, you could answer that that's exactly what the Gemara's safek is over here. In terms of the question with regards to the Ran and Yediyah versus Shmia, that might be the two sides of the Gemara over here. The first side of the Gemara is that Shmia means literally Shmia, that one must hear, and therefore the principle of Rabbi Zeira would apply, and that's why the Cheresh would be precluded. Or, when we say that, oh, Dilma b'shama isha lo ma'akev, that's what it means, that the Shmia is not ma'akev because Shmia is not the issue here. Shmia is not hearing, but it's rather understanding, knowledge, awareness, and therefore you could accomplish this without Shmia. So that might be the second side of this question here of the Gemara. And that might exactly be the question that the Gemara is posing. And that might be the same thing with regards to that question of Rabbi Zeira. The Gemara's question is Rabbi Zeira's din limited to cases like Minachot, where there's a mitzvah to do something, and therefore it's relevant to say that if something can't be done, Bila Ma'akevet Bo, if Bila is impossible, then the mitzvah can't be performed, that should be Ma'akev. But in a case by Nidarim where Shmia is not necessary, it's not a mitzvah to have Shmia, maybe that shouldn't be, Rabbi Zeir's din shouldn't be relevant at all. Or the other side is maybe Rabbi Zeir's din has broader application. And that might actually be the question of the Gemara over here. How broad an application does Rabbi Zeir's din have? Is it limited to items that have a requirement, a mitzvah, an act of mitzvah to do it? Or does Rabbi Zeir's din even apply, or can we extend it to cases like our case over here, where Shmiah is not a mitzvah, but it is something that's mentioned by the Torah? How seriously do we take that Shmiah? And maybe Rabbi Zeir can give us an indication that even though Shmiah is not necessary, it's still something that deems the hafara invalid if it cannot be done at all, if it's impossible for the Shmiah to happen. So in both of those instances, the question can be answered by saying that is exactly what the question of the Gemara is in this instance. Now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rava, Tashma. Let us see from the bright over here. It says, Vashama Isha, Prat the Eshet Cheresh. So that the Isha, the husband, Ishalah, he heard it. That comes to exclude an Eshet Cheresh, Shma Mina. From there we conclude that obviously an Eshet Cheresh is excluded over here. So now what is clear from the bright that the Rava brought is that a Cheresh is not able to perform Hafara. Now the question of why is a Cheresh not able to perform Hafara? Is the failure of the Cheresh to perform Hafara because he can't hear? And that makes him invalid as a Gavra, meaning from the din of Rabbi Zeira? Or is the problem for the Cheresh that literally we require you to hear something, and the failure to hear it, or the Shmiah, is something that is Ma'akev the Hafara? So it's not clear here from the Gemara which of those two conclusions you could have. That would impact our understanding on what the din would be with regards to the Baal. If you say that this is a unique din with regards to the Cheresh, and with regards to the Baal, this bright is not addressing the Baal at all, because the failure over here is a failure in the Cheresh as a Gavra because he lacks the ability to hear. And therefore he is Pasul, like the din of Rabbi Zeira says, and that is why he fails. But a Baal, a husband, would be able to, in this case, do Hafara without Shmiah, because he is a Bar Shmiah. So that's one way you could look at it. The other possibility is to look at it is that the Shmiah is a necessity or necessary, and therefore this should be an answer to both questions. It should answer the question of Cheresh, but it should also answer the question of the Baal, that Shmiah is necessary. If Shmiah is necessary, then the Baal also would require Shmiah over here. Based on that, there are actually two ways to conclude the Gemara over here, and that happens to be a machloket rishonim as to what is the outcome or what is the conclusion of this Gemara. You can see in the Rosh. The Rosh says here, "V'hadalo mighty Rova hachbraita the mifshat baya kamaita the Rami Bar Chama." How come Rova didn't bring this before to answer the question of Rami Bar Chama when Rami Bar Chama asked about the Baal? Why doesn't he bring this as a proof to the fact that the Baal is okay? Because if you look at the Braita, you can make a diuk out of the Braita. The diuk out of the Braita is that a Cheresh is problematic, but the Baal is fine. So maybe that would be a good conclusion here, and you could have brought this as proof also before. He says, Mishum, the Dilma Tana Gufei Misvekale, Beinish Dalma. Maybe this Tan on the bright that doesn't know what the din is, and he himself is misupak about what the din is with regards to a person's not a cheresh. Iba ishmiya, whether you do require shmiya or not. So what he brought in the bright though is only the things that he was certain about. He's certain that the pasuk or the limud excludes a cheresh, because the cheresh fails on both aspects. He fails from the aspect of shmiya because he can't hear. He also fails from the side that he's a gavra that's not a bar shmiya. So no matter what, the Eshet Cheresh or the Cheresh would be precluded in this case. With regards to a Baal, it's not clear what this Braita is indicating to us. And therefore, you have the Rosh over here saying that he doesn't know if this Braita really answers the other question. If you look in the Ran, he says, Maskinan, the Becheresh Ma'akva Beishmiya, the Kot of Aramban, Zal, the Dafa Cheresh, Mishum Dalav Bar Shmihu. So the Ramban concludes over here that this diuk that the Rosh was unwilling to make, the Ramban is willing to make and say that the halacha is that with regards to the Baal, it's not makev. With regards to the Chereish, it is a makev, because the issue here is that the Chereish is lacking as a bar shmi'a. And therefore the Baal, he is a bar shmi'a. He just didn't hear about it. He didn't know about it. And that's not makev, and that's not a problem. Even though what the Rosh is saying here is valid, which is that the diuk out of the Braita is not a strong diuk, the Ran indicates that there is a different reason why the Ramban might have paskened this way. And this is a reason that would also push the Rambam, who has the same psak, in this direction. Which is that when we started out this question, it says, Bai Rami Bachama Cherish Maushiv Yafer Liishto. Im Tim Salomar Baal Mefer Below Shmiya. We know that the Rambam believes that when the Gemara says Im Tim Salomar, that's conclusive. That means that's what the Gemara believes. So here, it's the, in the posing of this question, the Gemara says, "In Tim Salomar, Baal Mefer, Below Shmiya." There, it tells you what the Gemara thinks about the Baal, that it's concluded that with regards to the Baal, there is no requirement of Shmiya, and there's no demand for Shmiya by the Baal. And therefore, for that reason, that is why the Ramban, and in addition, the Rambam, would paskin in this direction, even though, as the Rosh points out, the Braita is not miduyak enough to teach us this information. It's not from the Braita, but rather from this Imtim Salomar that happens earlier in the Gemara. Now, in terms of the conclusion, the Rambam here paskins alocha like this Gemara, that a Cheresh is pasul, but when he brings down the din that a Cheresh is pasul, he brings down the Cheresh is pasul because of the din of Rabbi Zeira. Now, truthfully, based on our Gemara, that's not the reason that the Cheresh is pasul. The reason the Cheresh is pasul is because you have a Gzerat HaKatuf, which says, Vishama Isha, and that is, Prat LeEshet Cheresh. So that's the exclusion of the Eshet Cheresh. So why is it that if there's a Gzerat HaKatuf that's telling us this, is the Rambam bring the reason down as Rabbi Zeira? So Rav Soloveitchik suggests in the Shimut Shiurim, but that's exactly what the Gemara is suggesting in the end of the conclusion. The Gzerat HaKatuf is telling you something that we mentioned before, which is the possibility that Rabbi Zeira's din applies more broadly than we thought before. We thought before that Rabbi Zeira's din only applied to mitzvot, like by mincha, but we didn't know if it extended beyond that. The Gzeirat HaKatuv comes to tell you that Rabbi Zeira's din is applicable or relevant, even in cases that are not mitzvot, like in our case of hafara over here. And therefore it's relevant. So that's why the Rambam quotes Rabbi Zeira as the reason Peresh, because the Gzeirat HaKatuv is extending Rabbi Zeira to cases like this. And we have examples of that in the Tosafot in Yevamot, in a couple of places, the Tosafot in Yevamot and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Bet. There's also a Tosafot in Yevamot and Kuf Dalet Amud Bet. And in both places, Tosafot suggests this idea that the extension of this idea of Rabbi Zeira to these cases indicates that this is not just a din with regards to mitzvot, but a din that has more of a broad application. And that might be the answer of the Gemara over here, that the Gzeirat HaKatuv teaches you that Rabbi Zeira has a broader application, is not limited just to cases of mitzvot. Okay, Ibayiluhu, Baal, Mahu, Shefer, L'shtei Nashav, Bevat Achat. With regards to the Baal, what is the din in terms of him performing a hafara for both of his wives simultaneously? Because do we say Heni Ota Davka, that the Ota then is literally mean her and no one else? Oh, Lav Davka. Or is Ota not to mean literally, just generally, you're just usually dealing with one person, you're not dealing with multiple people. So which is it? Is this Ota to be taken literally? Or is this Ota, like the Shema Isha, maybe not be taken so literally, it's just giving you the normal circumstance, or the Orcha de Milta, but it's not coming to teach you a din. Soloveitchik suggested here that the question might revolve around the issue of how we view the Hafarat HaNeder. Do we view the Hafarat HaNeder as a Hafarat of the Neder, or is the Hafarat directed to the person in particular who took the Neder? If you think the Hafarat is directed to the Neder itself, then in terms of Hafarat HaNeder over here, in some sense, you're only accomplishing one mitzvah here, or you're prescriptively removing the ned there by the annulment, doing the hafara, but that's all you're doing. You're doing a hafara. And hafara is one item, and then it's otah. You're taking care of the ned there, and you're doing it in one shot. On the other hand, if you think that the hafara is directed towards the individual who took the neder, then when you have two wives over here, you have a problem, because the hafara is not only directed at this woman, but it's also directed at the other woman. And that might be the nature of the question of the Gemara over here, which is, what are we focused on? Are we focused on the hafara on the neder, on the nidarim, or are we focused on the individuals who took the nidarim? And that might cause that differentiation as to whether you're really doing one act or you're doing multiple acts over here. And that might be the nature of the question of the Gemara. The Ran once again over here says that Baha the Bai Baal Hu Adin Ba'av, that the question here with regards to the Baal is also true by the Av. So if the father has two daughters, this would be the same question that the Gemara would ask here, because the Heniota appears both by the father and Heniota also appears by the husband. And so since the same Lashon is used in both instances, the question is equally relevant in both instances. And therefore, he thinks that the question's just brought here because of the case of Baal, but that doesn't mean that the same question doesn't apply to an Av, to a father. So Amar Ravina. Ravina says, Tashma, let us look at this case from Sota. Ein mashkin shtei sotot kachat, mipnei shliba gas bechaverta. We don't bring two sotot together to give them to drink from the mei sota, because we're afraid that one of them will influence the other. If we bring a sota to the Azara, we do whatever's in our power to stop the necessity for erasing the name of Hashem. So we first try to coerce her, if she's actually guilty, to admit to the fact that she did something wrong. And then we go through a whole process of being miyageher to wear her down and to have her admit to the fact that she did something wrong, because we wear her down to the point where she won't have the capacity to stand up to this if she's really guilty. So if you bring two women to the Azara, one of them might be guilty and one of them might not be guilty. The one who's not guilty is going to hold out, because she's literally not guilty, and she'll hold out. The other woman who is guilty might take strength from the other woman who's holding out, and she'll hold out, not because she's not guilty, but she'll hold out because she sees the other woman holding out. So we're afraid of the influence of one on the other impacting on their admission of guilt. And therefore, we don't want to bring them together because of the fact that it might influence how they act in this circumstance. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo min Hashem huzeh. That's not the reason why we don't bring shtei sotot together. El shum shenemar, because it says in the pasuk, Vishka uta, uta levada. So that when it says that you give her to drink, it uses the word uta, and uta means levada. Now, first of all, the problem with that is there is no pasuk, Vishka uta. You go to the Parshat Sota in Parshat Naso, there's no pasuk that says Vishka uta. So there are many who believe that the pasuk that should be quoted over here is not Vishka uta, but rather a pasuk that appears much earlier in the sequence with regards to the sota, which is Vikriv uta hakohen ve'mida lifnei Hashem. That Vikriv uta, that the kohen will bring her before Hashem, and there it uses the term uta. So many quote that as the source pasuk. The Kriv Ota is the source, because there we actually do have the word Ota appear. Interesting, as you can see here in the Masorah Tashas, he says that the Rambam quotes a pasuk that says, Ve'emid Ota Kohen, that the Kohen stands her up. And he says, Va'korchach ta'ut nafal b'sefer Rambam, k'lo nimsa pasuk zeh. There's no such pasuk that's quoted in Mishnah Torah by the Rambam. It's Rechlamam, Ve'kriv Ota HaKohen. He says that that's really what the Rambam meant, which was Ve'kriv Ota. Now what about with regards to our Gemara over here? Our Gemara here does not quote V'hikriv Ota. If you look in the Rosh, the last line of the Rosh, he says that it really has to do with the fact that Hishka is written with a Mapik He. The word Hishka appears twice in the Parsha. One time it's written without a Mapik He. The second time it's written with a Mapik He. And therefore he says that's the meaning of the word V'hishka with a Mapik He. V'hishka et hamayim. So there it uses the word term V'hishka with a Mapik He. And the Mapik He tells you, V'hishka ota. So when you have Hishka with the Mapik He, it's the equivalent of having been written there, V'hishka ota. And that ota is the diuk that the Gemara is making out of here, that the ota means livada, alone. Now, the question you have to ask here is, what does this braita have to do with our case over here? Why is this an answer to the question that we posed? So the easiest and the most superficial way to view this is to say that the Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yehuda's position helps us over here because Rabbi Yehuda darshins vishka uta, and he says that uta means levada. And so too by us, you'll say the same thing. When it says by the woman that hini uta, uta, we're going to darshin, that uta means her exclusively, and you can't do this with two women at once. You can't be Mayfair, the Nidarim, of two of his wives simultaneously, or of two of his daughters simultaneously. So that's the easiest way to parallel between these two cases, is to say that the Ravina's proof is from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda states Vishka Uta. On the other hand, there are those that suggest that the proof comes out of the Shita of the Rabbanan. The Ravina mi the Rabbanan Mukhla Labayin, Delo Mashmanahu Uta, Dafka. Just for the exact opposite reason. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda quotes Uta as the source means that the Tanakama does not believe that that's the source. The fact that the Tanakhama brings the source, the fact that they will take strength from each other and therefore block one of them from admitting to the guilt or that which they are really guilty for, that's what stops us. How come the Tanakhama doesn't quote the Limud of Rabbi Yehuda? It must be because the Tanakhama does not subscribe to the Limud of Rabbi Yehuda. And based on that, the conclusion from this would be just the opposite. Ravina is bringing the Braita to show you that we don't darshan Ota, and that Ota is not applicable by Sota. And so too here, by the case of Hafara, it should also not be applicable. So that we don't darshan the word Ota. And that is the Shita of the Rambam. And that's where the Rambam paskins, and it is a Tosefta that the Ran brings that supports this position of the Rambam. That the proof of Ravina is actually coming from the Shita of the Rabbanon, who argue on Rabbi Yehuda and say, well, we don't darshan Ota. And the same would be true here by us, that we wouldn't darshan Ota. Now, the Rambam has an interesting conclusion over here, because in the end, he paskins that with regards to two women, that he can do the hafara ke'achat. On the other hand, with regards to the sota, he says you cannot be mashkesh tein nashav ke'achat. He cannot bring his two wives and have them drink a sotot in one shot. The question is, how does the Rambam differentiate? Either we are darshaning ota, we're not darshaning ota. And that goes back to what I mentioned before, that Rav Soloveitchik suggests that maybe there's a difference by nidarim. That even if you darshan ota by sota, and you do darshan ota by the case of nidarim as well, and you say that it is a requirement of hafara, maybe that relates to the neder or the nidarim themselves, not to the women. And therefore, you could be mefer shnehem ba'achat because the hafara is related to the neder, and that's one item, doesn't devolve down to the two women who actually took the nidarim. And that's maybe a way to explain the seeming contradiction within the psak of the Rambam. But what's clear here from the Rambam is that he thinks that the Rabbonon say that we don't darshan ota, and therefore, since we don't darshan ota, that is the conclusion here with regards to Nidarim, that a hafara can be done simultaneously. On the other hand, the Ram quotes from the Ramban, who disagrees, and he says, because if you look back in the Gemara in Sota, the Gemara in Sota in Daf Chet says, you know who the Tanakhama is? The Tanakhama of this Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, who is Doresh Taima Dekra. Rabbi Shimon is someone who, when the Torah tells you Gzeret HaKatuv, gives you a halacha through a drasha in the Pasuk, he attempts to understand what that drasha is, and then through that framework, he actually applies it only in those cases where that reason is relevant. And so what Rabbi Shimon is doing is actually explaining why Vishka Uta is the Gzeret HaKatuv. So in essence, what the Ramban says is that the Tanakhama, who is Rabbi Shimon, accepts the drush of Rabbi Yehuda. But he's just explaining the reason for the fact that there is a Gzeret HaKatuv of Vishka Uta. That comes to teach you that the reason why the Torah tells you can only do one at a time is because of this. But that means that both the Tanakhama, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda agree that the drusha comes out of Vishka Uta. If that's the case, then both the Rabbonon or the Tanakhama or Rabbi Shimon, whatever you want to call them, and Rabbi Yehuda agree that Uta is the drusha by Sota, and that means the conclusion by Nidarim would be Uta is applicable, and therefore you can't do Hafara for both wives simultaneously, you have to do one at a time, and that is the way that the Ramban paskins over here. And then the Ran adds a little line at the end and says, "V'nirli l'alocha di'eich denu mefer l'shteina shav v'atachat hachinami eno mikayim l'shtehem ka'achat." Just like he can't do afara for them simultaneously, he also cannot do a kiyum for both of them simultaneously. And we'll see how that works further on. Even though the word ota only appears by hafara, by hakama, it still is applicable. And that might have to do with what I mentioned yesterday, how closely related are the hakama and the hafara. That's one possibility as to why it would apply by hakama. Or maybe that hafara requires less understanding and less cognition of what you're doing. And over there, if we require you to split it, then certainly by the kiyum neder, we require you to split it. So the Ran says he'll discuss it later on, but just to know the fact that if you think that the hafara is split, that the Ran thinks that also that will apply to the hakama as well, that you have to do them separately. Now with regards to Ein Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot, which is what the Gemara in Sotan Daf Chet quotes as the reason for the fact that you can't bring Shtei Sotot Keachat. Why can't you bring in two Sotot and one shot into the Azara? It's because it looks like you're doing Mitzvot Chavilot, chavilot. You're piling up mitzvot. Now, what does that mean that you're piling up mitzvot? So, Rashi, the Rambam seems to say this, and Tosafot in some places also says this, is because the Nir Alav Kib Masui. It looks like it's a burden. When you do something at one shot, when you do it all at once, then it looks like you're just trying to discharge the obligation. You're trying to get rid of everything en masse, and that's the problem over here. And the Masui is improper when you're approaching Hashem or when you're doing a mitzvah. A mitzvah is something that you do out of love, something that you do out of care. It's not something you do just to discharge your obligation. And if you do it simultaneously or you're doing it with multiple women, that looks like it's a masui and just trying to get rid of the problem. That's one reason brought. Tosafot in the Gemara in Moed Katan with regards to Ein Marvim Simcha B'Simcha also mentions a second reason, which is focus. That a person only has the capacity to focus on one mitzvah at a time. And therefore, we won't allow you to do multiple mitzvot in one shot because you don't have the capacity to deal with all those mitzvot simultaneously. The truth is that this also appears in one other case by the Gemara in Pesachim, talks about it with regards to Kiddush and Abdullah and Kiddush and Birkat HaMazon, whether you can do them on a single coast. And over there, the Gemara also invokes the principle of Ein Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. Now, whether that Ein Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot in the Gemara in Pesachim is similar to the one over here is up for debate. Some Rishonim see them as being correlated or for the same reason. Others see them being a different reason, that it's more integral. Over there by the coast, on a single coast, you're trying to perform two mitzvot, and there might be a more fundamental problem in terms of Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. Versus over here, where you have two sotot, it's just because you're doing two at once that causes the problem. The Gemara in Sota then qualifies this din, and says that's true, b'kohen echad. Aval b'shtei kohanim, it's not a problem. So now, the way that Bali HaTosafot learn over there is that only when it's done by one kohen is that considered to be an issue or a problem because Nir Alav Kimasui. It looks like you're doing it as a burden. There's one guy who's trying to get rid of everything at once. Plus, you have the issue of the fact that this one kohen, if he's going to do both sotot, then he has a problem of focusing on the mitzvah. But Tosafot over there even indicates that if the Kohen Echad does it quenchily, it would still be problematic. And the mere fact that one brings the two sotot to the Azarah in one shot is problematic. That seems to be what the Rosh is saying in our sugya, which is Emi Vin Azarah bit Nashim Sotot Ashkutam Yachad. The bringing of those women to the Azarah in of itself is problematic because it's Nirek Masui. And so therefore Tosafot says over there, the problem is bringing two sotot to the Mikdash simultaneously, which is Nirek Masui. In addition, even if you do them sequentially, that's also problematic because it's Nirek Masui. It looks like you're trying to do something, discharge the obligation quickly, and get it done. And that's where Tosafot says the problem is. On the other hand, if you have Shtei Kohanim, two Kohanim, then there's no longer looks like Nirek Masui because each Kohen takes care of each woman. They can focus individually on that woman. And there's no assembly line here where this one kohen is pushing all these women through because each one has their own kohen that is performing the mitzvah of sota. So based on that, Tosafot says that by kohen echad it's a problem. To bring the two women to the azara simultaneously is problematic because it's nirek masui. To process them by one coin is problematic, but if you have two koanim, then it would be fine. On the other hand, the Rambam does not bring this distinction or this differentiation of koin echad and shtei koanim. And the Mogen Avraham claims that the reason is because the Rambam read the Gemara just the opposite. When the Gemara says, kam koin echad, kam b'shnei koanim, the answer was that if you do it b'koin echad, it's fine. But if you do it b'shnei koanim, that's where it's problematic. Because koin echad, by definition, will have to do the cases sequentially. And by doing them sequentially, then you don't have a problem of nir lav kemasoi, because he takes care of one, and then he takes care of the other. On the other hand, if you have two koanim working simultaneously, it looks like you're trying to do this en masse, sota program, and you're trying to take care of it all in one shot. And that's what the problem is. Based on that Tosafot, the Mordechai concludes, you would say that when it comes to taking out two Sifrei Torah from the Aron, that Tosafot would not permit one to take out two Sifrei Torah simultaneously from the Aron, because he doesn't allow you to bring two Sotot to the Azarah simultaneously. And then the Mordechai notes that that's not our minhag. Our minhag is to take out the two Sifrei Torah. On the other hand, the Mordechai says that we do keep this in some way, which is that we don't allow you to open the second Sefer Torah until we've completely closed the first Sefer Torah. And that's the way that the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Or HaChaim, Siman, Kuf Mem Zayin, Sifchet, B'yom Sheish Bo Bet Sifrei Torah, Lo Yiftechu HaBet HaSheni, Lo Yisira Mapat Shiglalu HaRishon, until you've fully rolled up the first one. And the Mishnah Brewer writes, why? Sheinu Se Mitzvot, Chavilot, Chavilot. On that, the Magen Avraham says that we actually follow the Rambam sometimes and follow the Tosafot sometimes. And he says here, B'tzarech Yon Al HaRambam, Shepasak Stam Lo Chilek, which I mentioned before, that the Rambam does not differentiate between Kohen Echad and Shtei Kohanim. And he says, V'chein Nir Li Shum Eferesh Ipcho, that he does explain just the opposite of the Tosafot. V'inei, and then he says, based on that, La Rambam Mutar La'vi Shnei Tinokot Bevat Achat, according to the Rambam, you're allowed to bring two babies into the shul to give them a brit milah, ulamol zeh v'achar kach zeh, and for one moel to take care of one of them, and then take care of the second one sequentially, that would be fine. Aval le'olam bevat achat b'shnei moalim asur. But if you were to have the brit milah of the twins simultaneously with two different moalim, that would not be permitted according to the Rambam. Because the Rambam says that as long as it's one person doing it, then that doesn't look like a masui. And there's no restriction against bringing multiple parties into a situation, just like there's no problem bringing the shtei sotot to the azara. The only problem is processing them simultaneously. And the same would be true by the brit milah of twins. On the other hand, the Tosfot, asur l'aviyam b'vatachat l'mulam, zecher zeh. First of all, it would be asur to bring them together to the shul or into the room where you're going to do the brit milah, number one. And it would be asur to do the brit milah zecher zeh sequentially. Aval b'mulam b'vatachat b'shnei moalim shari. But according to Tosafot, if you had two separate moalim, they could actually simultaneously do the brit milah, and that would be fine. So he says that that difference in the din with brit milah is a result of their positions, the Rambam's position and Tosafot's position with regards to the sota. And then he says, based on that, v'imkein b'shnei sifrei Torah, when we take out two Sifrei Torah from the Aron simultaneously, no'agim ka'rambam, we're passing like the Rambam, the lo kabdina alahava'a, because we don't worry about the fact of taking two out at once, or bringing two into the realm of mitzvah simultaneously. Ola Tosafot, and we end up passing like Tosafot, b'birkat hamazon shel nisuin, when it comes to the birkat sheva brachot and birkat hamazon, they don't bring two cups of wine together in front of the person who's benching. They rather, after he finishes benching, they'll take a separate kos, do the sheva brachot over the separate kos, and the person who's benching does his benching over a kos, and each one will keep their own kos of a separate kos. One kos for the birkat hamazon, one kos for the sheva brachot, and that seems to be like the balei ha-tosafot. So over there, we don't bring the two kosot out simultaneously because we're passing like the Tosafot. The Magen Avraham just points out that our minag in these two instances seems to, one place, passing like the Rambam by Sifrei Torah, and in one case, passing like the Balei HaTosafot with regards to the Shtei Kosot by Sheva Brachot and Birkat HaMazon. Our practice today with regards to twins at a Brit Milah is actually to only bring one in at a time to do the full Milah, then to actually take a break, and then bring in the second one to do it. So we actually are Choshesh for the din of the Balei HaTosafot, so we don't bring them in together, and we also don't process them with a single Mohel one after the next, but rather we break in between and we wait and have some time between the first Milah and the second Milah, like that Shita of the Balei HaTosafot. Or HaShulchan actually disagrees with the Magen Avraham and says that he doesn't think the din of mitzvot chavilot is applicable to Brit Milah at all. He says, Oni Adati, Nireh, the mitzvah shayom hi chovata, that a mitzvah that is tied to a specific day and time, lo shach v'zeh chavilot chavilot. Sharei chovata yomu, because the din of a meal has to be done on the 8 days. How can you call it chavilat chavilot? Because he's actually doing it on the time that he's supposed to do it. Chazal lo amru rak v'soto to mitzoraim ukuyotzibem, the list that's mentioned there in Sultan Davchet, sheinam chovata yom, that they're not an obligation that specific day. They're an obligation, but you don't have to process them all on the same day. You can process them on different days. So there, davko, do we say that it's a problem of chavilot, chavilot. Aval, Mila, Shigiaz Mana, Lo Shaya Chavilot, Chavilot. But when it comes to Mila, where it's the Zman of the Mila, then Chavilot, Chavilot is not relevant. Because it's not relevant to say, Shelo Ye Dome Alav Kimasui, because it's an obligation for you to do this on this day and at this time. And therefore, you can't claim that it's a Masui. Obviously, you could argue on the Aruch HaShulchan and say that, even though there's an obligation on that day, when in the day you do it, or how you do it during the day, or how you discharge that obligation could make it look like a Masui or not like a Masui. And obviously, in the case of Kiddush and Abdullah, which are both time-bound and obligations of the time, the Gemara still invokes the principle of Chavilot to Chavilot over there. Although you could argue, like we mentioned before, that the Chavilot to Chavilot over there is something more integral to the mitzvah, because there you're doing two mitzvot on a single kos, and that might be more problematic than the case here, but the Shtei Sotot, where you're trying to process them, or the Shtei Milot, where you're trying to do both Milot at the same time, or one after the other. All right, so that's just a quick summary, or big picture look at Enu Sim Mitzvot Chavilot, Chavilot. And now the Gemara continues with the Mishnah and says, Bogeret Shishata Yud Bet Chodesh V'almana Lamed Yom. A Bogeret that has elapsed 12 months and an Almana who has 30 days have elapsed. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hoyol Ubala Chayav V'Mizonoteha Yafer. Since the husband now is required to support her and provide her Mizonot, he has the right to be Mefer her Nidarim. That the Baal doesn't have the right to nullify the Nidarim until she enters into his possession, meaning until there is Nisuin. So we actually saw this back on Daf Ayin, and the Gemara over there discussed this machlok between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim, and also relates back to the Gemara in Ketubot, which we're going to discuss in 1 minute. The Gemara is actually going to quote that Gemara in Ketubot, but Rabbi Lezer's opinion is that based on the fact that the husband becomes obligated in providing mizonot for his wife at that threshold of 12 months, because that was the time period given by Chazal to the individuals in order to prepare themselves for the wedding. Once that time has elapsed, then the husband becomes obligated to provide her with mizonot. Since he's obligated mizonot, Rabbi Lezer says that allows him or gives him the right of hafara. Now then, Chachamim say that the hafara is not connected to the mizonot, but rather it's connected to the nisuin. And until there's Nisuin, there is no right of hafara for the Baal. Now, with regards to the Mishnah, the Gemara in Ketubot says that a Bogeret does not have to wait 12 months. A Bogeret only has to wait 12 months if she gets engaged exactly on the day that she turned into a Bogeret. That means on the 12 and a half birthday, if she got engaged on that day, then she would have 12 months. But once 12 months have elapsed of her being a Bogeret, so if she went from 12 and a half to 13 and a half, by the time she's 13 and a half, she looks like an almana, quote unquote, then, and she only gets 30 days to prepare. Because she is past her prime, we'll call it, she should be ready already to get married, and then she doesn't need the full 12 months, she only needs the 30 days to prepare to get married. So based on that, the Gemara says that the Girsa in our Mishnah possibly should be Bogeret v'shishata yud bet chodesh. It's talking about a case of a Bogeret, and Shishata Yud Bet Chodesh. Now, Shishata Yud Bet Chodesh could either be talking about a Bogeret, who, on the day of her turning into a Bogeret, that's when she got engaged, or it could be talking about a Nara that waits Yud Bet Chodesh. So there's actually three dinim here. There's the din of a Bogeret, and an Almana, who are waiting 30 days, and Shashata Yubit Kodesh, a case of Shashata Yubit Kodesh, which is either a Nara or Bogeret on the day of her turning onto a Bogeret, and that would be reduced, again, based on her age. If she was 13 already, then she would only get 6 months to get to her 13 and a half birthday. That would be what is for a Bogeret. Based on that, our Mishnah has broad application to all women, even to a Nara, even though a father has a right of Havrat Nidrim by the Nara. But since the husband now is going to take over the Mizonot from the father, Rabbi Lezer believes that he also gets the right of Hafara, and the father is knocked out of the picture. Now, we saw before on Daf Ayin that there was actually a machloket about the girsa here. That was the girsa of the Ran, that the conclusion of the Gemara says, Bo'bogeret v'shashata yubet chodesh. And then the Rosh concluded that the girsa over here should remain this way, which is Bo'bogeret v'shashata yubet chodesh. It's one item, a Bo'bogeret who waited 12 months. And that is based on, see, in the Rambam, in the Perish of Mishnayot, Rambam in the Perish of Mishnayot says, Bo'bogeret lo, kamo sheba ikar biktubot, kemen sheba gra, ein la via reshut ba. When she becomes a Bogeret, her father has no rights in her. Since this Bogeret has left the auspices of her father, and now the Baal is chayev to support her, he should already designate it to his possession, and he can be made for the Nidarim. But what you see from the Rambam is that it's Dafka a Bogeret and Dafka an Almana. A Bogeret and Almana are not subject to the hafara of their father or of any other party. They are independent parties. Since they're independent parties, the trigger of mizonot can allow the husband then alone to be made for the nidarim. On the other hand, the Rambam says if she's a ne'ara, the father still has auspices over the daughter. And since that's the case, even if the Baal is providing mizonot, he would not have the ability to be made for the neder. And therefore they read the Mishnah or the gears of the Mishnah as being Bogeret Shishata Yubit Chodesh. It has to be a case of a Bogeret, Dafka. It's not talking about a case of a Ne'ara. And so yes, this is a Bogeret, even though this is a difficult way to explain the Mishnah, that it happened on the day that she turned to be a Bogeret, and she has to wait the 12 months or less. But it's Dafka by Bogeret and Dafka by Almana. A Ne'ara would not have that din over here, as opposed to the understanding of the Ran and many of the other Rishonim who explained it before, that it is talking about a case of a Ne'ara. Now the Gemara says, Amarabo, Rabbi Lezer, U Mishnah Rishuna, Amru Davar Echad. Rabbi Lezer and the Mishnah Rishuna in Ketubot said the same thing. Titzan, what is this Mishnah Rishuna that we had in Ketubot? Notim le betula yubet chodesh lefranei satzma. The betula, a young girl, is given 12 months to prepare herself for the wedding. Higia yubet chodesh, once the 12 months have elapsed, ochelet mishalo. She's entitled to mizonot from her husband. And she's also entitled to eat chuma at that point in time. Aval, hayavam eno machil bechuma. Yavam does not grant that right to the woman. Asta shisha chodoshim bifnei abal. If she was waiting 12 months, meaning they got halakhically engaged, and then 6 months elapsed, and then her husband passed away. Shisha chodoshim bifnei yavam. And now she has 6 months where she's waiting to marry the yavam. Vafilu kulam bifnei abal chaser yom echad. Or she got to the 11th month, it was the day before the wedding, and chas v'shalom, the husband passed away, and now she only has to wait one day with the yavam. Ukulam bifnei yavam, chaser yom echad. Or the case of the scenario is where they were all in front of the yavam, missing one day, in that the husband died a day after they got engaged, and the remainder of the 12 months were waited by the yavam. Eina uchelet bichuma. She does not entitled to eat chuma, because the yavam is not mazakeh her to eat chuma. Zo Mishnah Rishona. This is the Mishnah Rishona. What the Mishnah Rishona says is that the Chachamim intervened to stop a woman from getting what she is rightfully entitled to at the moment of Erusin. At the time of Erusin, the woman becomes Kinyan Kaspo of the husband. That's what Kiddushin creates. It creates a Kinyan Kaspo. And with regards to chuma in a Torah, a person then is entitled to eat chuma. The woman would be entitled to eat chuma, because she is now engaged halachically to this Kohen. In addition, he probably has the obligation to support her, give her mizonot. What the Chachamim did is they postponed that for 12 months because they wanted to give the woman time in order to prepare herself for the wedding. So they said that even though midoraita, she's entitled to eat chuma immediately, we're going to postpone that 12 months out. So after 12 months, she will be entitled, she will be given that right to eat truma, because the husband now has failed to carry out his obligation to marry her after the 12 months have elapsed. And therefore, they put her back on the dindo raita, where she's now entitled to get truma, and she's entitled to get mizonot from the baal. So what the Mishnah Rishonah says is that's only true with regards to a baal, a husband. But with regards to yavam, that's not the case, because there's a gzeret ha-katuv that says with regards to truma, it has to be kinyan kaspo, but not kinyan achiv. It has to be his kinyan, but not the kinyan of his brother. By yavam, the woman he's marrying is not because he made the kinyan was made by his brother. Kiddushin was effectuated by the brother, and now he's going to perform nisuim, which is the yibum. So based on that, they say that a yavam does not grant that right to a woman. There is a machloket rishonim as to what's the case if she already elapsed 12 months in front of the husband. The cases that are mentioned here in the Mishnah only mention cases of less than 12 months, and why is that? So the Rosh says over here, afilu gia zman b'chaya abal umeit, even if the 12 months elapsed and she started to eat truma because her husband did not take her as a full-fledged wife, did not consummate the marriage, but then he dies, eina yavam machila b'truma. She then loses her right to truma. So she gets the right because her husband already passed the 12-month point. But as soon as her husband dies, she loses that right, and therefore she's no longer granted truma because she's now waiting with the yavam. That's the shita of the Rosh over here. It's also the shita of many of the Rishonim and Rashi in the Gemara in Ketubot. And the Rosh says that the same din would have been applicable even if they were all vuadin, if all these days kulam bifnei abal. But the Gemara or the Mishnah only wanted to bring down cases that were she never ate truma. Because if she really did 12 months in front of the baal, she would have gotten truma temporarily while the husband was still alive, and then she would have switched it off when it went to the avam, and so the Mishnah didn't want to deal with that more complex case. But then they had Rashi over here, and the Rabbeinu Tam and the Gemara to both have a different approach, and they say this. Hasta kulam yud bet chodesh lifnei harishon. If she did the entire 12 months before the husband, v'nafla lifnei yavam, ho v'kvar chayav abal b'mezonota, machila yavam b'truma. Since she already got the right through her husband to eat truma, that right remains in place, and the yavam can also grant her truma. Apo pish lo ichnisa kiknusa damya. Even though he hasn't consummated the marriage, she has a din like kiknusa. So what Rashi says there, and the Rabbeinu Tam says this in Ketubot, is that the yavam basically doesn't change the status quo. He just maintains whatever the status quo is. So if the status quo was that she wasn't eating truma because the 12 months didn't elapse with her husband, then that status quo remains in place, and he's not powerful enough to grant her the right to truma. On the other hand, if the 12 months already elapsed with the husband, and she has been entitled already to eat truma, then the yavam does not spoil that for her, does not ruin that for her. So even though he's not powerful enough to grant her truma, he's also not problematic enough to stop her from eating truma that she already got from her husband. Now what you see from the Mishnah Rishonah is that after 12 months elapse, certain halachot of a nisua kick in. So like Rabbi Eliezer says over here, Rabbi Eliezer says after the 12 months elapsed and the husband is now obligated to provide her mizonot, then she is deemed to be quote-unquote a nisua for farat nedarim. The Mishnah Rishonah says the same thing with regards to truma, that even though technically she can't eat truma until she's a nisua, nevertheless, after 12 months elapsed, and now he has to provide her mizonot, she's deemed to be a nisua at that point enough to eat the truma. And that's what the Gemara says over here, that Rabbi Lezer and the Mishnah Rishonah are saying the same thing. That there are many dinim that are triggered by nisuin. Some of them are triggered by irusin, some are triggered by nisuin. But after 12 months have elapsed, certain dinim go into effect, even though the marriage was not consummated. And Rabbi Lezer and the Mishnah Rishonah both say something along those lines. Now, even though the cases are not comparable, because if you look at the case of Rabbi Eliezer, he's talking on a do-raita level. Mi do-raita, this nether is a good nether. If you allow the husband to be made for the nether, that means that you're granting him the right to do a farah min ha-torah. So Rabbi Eliezer believes that the mizonot here grant him a right mi do-raita to be made for the nether. On the other hand, with regards to the 12 months elapsing and then eating truma, that's only a din dirabonon, because in essence, or in truth, the arusa is entitled to truma. She's kinyan kaspo from the time of erusin. It was the chachamim who entered and stopped her from getting truma until the 12 months elapsed. So then, when the 12 months elapse, all the Chachamim are doing is pulling away their Gzeira, the Rabbonon, and allowing it to be the Din D'Oraita. So the Mishnah Rishona is only telling you that there is a Din D'Rabbonon that is terminated once the 12 months elapse, and it goes back to the Din D'Oraita. On the other hand, Rabbi Lezer is saying, as a Din D'Oraita. So the Ran, noticing that inequality, says, with regards to the position of the Mishnah Rishona, Afilu achim lav demidi d'oraita kaima birshut balak Rabbi Lezer, lechuma nami, afagav nidurabonini, lo ukmua birshute, chamim asu chizuk l'dvayam kishel Torah. Because if it was not true that at the 12-month threshold that she turns into a deemed nisuah, according to the Mishnah Rishona, then the din of the Chachamim would have continued to override the din d'oraita. Because the takana of the Chachamim, that she waits 12 months, is a takanat Chachamim, but they have zan chizuk l'dvayam kishel Torah, and therefore they would have maintained that status. If it wasn't for the fact that her status changed d'oraita, the Chachamim would have kept it in place and said, that even though she was entitled from the time of Erusin, we're blocking it, and we'll continue to block it. It only could be if they believe that, all right, though, there's a change in status over here, would they rescind their Takana Drabanan. Now, their Takana Drabanan is for one of two reasons. One possibility is Mishum Simpon, which is the possibility that the husband might find something wrong with the woman that will either create a Kedushe Ta'ut or force him to divorce her. So now, if there is Kedushe Ta'ut, this woman, if from the time of Erusin was eating Truma, then retroactively, the Kiddushim are null and void, and that means that she was eating Truma when she wasn't entitled to. So because of that problem of Simpon, we didn't allow her to eat until it reaches the 12 months have elapsed. Now, once the 12 months elapse, how come we let her eat? That is because we assume that once he's already feeding her and he's spending money on her, that he's going to check into it. And even though he can't have intimacy with her because they have yet to have Nisuin, nevertheless, he can use his relatives or other parties to check her out to make sure that she has no Mumin. And therefore, that issue goes away. The other problem is the issue of Shema Tishke Le'achuta or Le'achia, that she might, if we give her Chuma, and she's living by her father's house, because at the time they were sitting waiting the 12 months, she's in her father's house until the end of the 12 months, where she moves in with her husband and consummates the marriage. During that period of time, he's providing her Mizonot, and he's giving her Chuma. She's a nice girl. She's going to say, oh, you know what? I have some extra food. Why don't you have some with me? Come here, sister, brother. Why don't you share with me? It's going to end up leading to a takala because she's going to be eating truma and her family is not entitled to that truma. So we worry about that. So that's why the Chachamim imposed it because of that problem. Now, once the 12 months elapse and the husband's forced to feed her, we assume at that point that he'll be miyached la makom. He'll designate her a place where she'll have the mizonot, segregated or separate from her father's house because he's already spending money on her. And she's deemed to be a nisua, so the husband will segregate her in that way in order to provide it separately. And therefore, we don't worry about the fact that she will give it to her family because she won't be with her family anymore for that eating. That is the Mishnah Rishona, which says that just like Rabbi Eliezer, after the 12 months elapsed, there is a change in the status of the woman. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it becomes Beit Isha, and she becomes a nisua midoraita, effectively when he provides mizonot. And for the Mishnah Rishona, that makes her into full-fledged Kinyan Kaspo, even though, again, that was already true by the time of Erusin, but now the Takanat Chachamim falls away and she becomes full-fledged Kinyan Kaspo at that time, according to the Mishnah Rishona. So her status changes, Mido Oraita in the case of Rabbi Lezer, Mido Rabbanan in the case of the Chachamim, although the Ran says that their change in status or their allowing the status change to take place shows you that they believe that this status change is real, because otherwise they would not forfeit their din derabbanan. And then that Mr. continues and says, "Beit din shalachrayim amru ein aishra uchalei b'truma ashi tikanes l'chupa." They said no more that the woman cannot eat truma until there is nisuin, and that means full-fledged nisuin. According to the Mishnah Achrona, even after 12 months elapse, she does not deem to be a nisua until she enters into the chupa. And as the Gemara says over there, everybody here agrees the problem here is Mishum Simpon. We worry about the fact that he might find some fault with her or some problem with her. And we don't trust that he will check it out in other places or can't check it out. So until he has intimacy, we're not sure that he will keep this woman or there's not a Mekach Ta'ut in the Kiddushin. And therefore, until Nisun is consummated, we won't allow her to eat Truma. So obviously, in that case, the Mishnah Chona is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So now what Rabba suggested is that Rabbi Eliezer and the Mishnah Rishonah derive from the same thinking or the same view. Amar Le Abaye disagrees and says, Dilma Lohi. Maybe that's not the case. Ad kan lo ashmin and Mishnah Rishonah le mechal betruma derabanan. The Mishnah Rishonah's din, and this is what we mentioned before, that's only a din derabanan. So maybe the Mishnah Rishonah's din is because we're dealing with truma derabanan. And we say truma derabanan, the way that Rashi explains truma derabanan is like what we say truma derabanan means in the rest of Shas, which is bizman hazeh. Today, where, according to some Rishonim, truma bizman hazeh is only midirabanan, don't be only derabanan. Inami betruma derabanan, kungon. Atzit shein unaku, pot that doesn't have a hole in it. So potted vegetables or potted plants. Or peirot, shenichnasu mechutz la'aretz, or yirakot. These are all things that only have truma derabanan mufresh from them. So maybe the din of the Mishnah Rishonah was only talking about truma midirabanan. Then they had the majority of the Rishonim explain over here. You can see this in the Rosh, you can see it in the Ran as well, that the truma derabanan over here is that midoraita, this woman is really entitled to eat truma because she's kinyan kaspo from the time of Erusin. The blocking of her eating truma is only an imposition midirabanan. So once you remove that problem derabanan, then you go back to the core doraita din. And that's why the Rabbanan over there in the Mishnah Rishonah say that after 12 months have elapsed, that she is entitled to eat truma because we're only dealing with a rabbinic block and removing a rabbinic block. On the other hand, Aval Nedarim, where we know the din is a din doraita, we're allowing him to be made for a neder which has an effectiveness doraita. So that means you're allowing him to nullify something doraita. They malo, maybe they wouldn't agree. Vadkan lo shemate le'el Rabbi Lezer le'gabi Nedarim. And maybe you can say the opposite way around as well, which is that according to Rabbi Lezer, we only hear this by Nidarim, Kidra Pinchas. Because of Rabbi Pinchas, Mishmei Rova Damar, Kolon Yoderet, Adad Balai Yoderet. Anybody takes the nether, takes it on the condition that her husband basically acquiesces to it. Aval Chuma, Afil Midrabanan, Nami Lo Achla. But maybe Rabbi Lezer will say, even though by Nidarim Doraita, I allow this threshold of 12 months elapsed, and him giving her mizonot to deem her to be Beit Isha, as if she is a Nisua. Even though it's a din doraita, that's because that is only together with this principle of Rabbi Pinchas, which is that a woman who takes a neder does it with her husband in mind, giving or granting her husband that right to be made for the neder. But when it comes to Chuma, there's no such concept there. So even though the Chuma is only a din derabanan, over there we don't have this added concept of Rabbi Pinchas, which tells you that the woman has the husband in mind. By Chuma, you don't have that, so therefore the Chuma's din, even though it's the Rabbanim, will remain the same, that she's not married yet, and therefore she's not entitled to Chuma. And that's why Rabbi says that the dinim are not necessarily comparable. And even though there's a mismatch here between the right to the Rabbanan, you could still hold that the din d'oraita is allowed hafara, and the din d'rabbanan is not allowed hafara, and vice versa as well. Now the Ran over here says that there were many Rishonim who extrapolated from this din, and said that if a person takes a neder, al dat chaveiro, takes neder with having in mind his friend or acknowledging his friend in the neder, that his friend, just like the husband over here, can be made for the neder. Just like the husband over here can be made for the neder because the wife has him in mind when she takes the neder. So too, if a person takes a neder and has his friend in mind, then his friend has the right to nullify to be made for the neder. That, the Ran says, was a shita to extrapolate this din to that case. And the Ran disagrees and says that that's just not true. Because when it comes to the hafara of the Baal, first of all, the Baal has to articulate his hafara. And he has to use the formula that the Torah and Chazal give us for hafarat nedarim. And it's not considered to be like a tnai or condition in the nether. Because if it was a condition in the nether, then if the condition wasn't fulfilled, or if he triggered that condition, then the neder would fall away automatically. And you wouldn't require him to do anything, or even to articulate any hafara, or to use any specific formulation of hafara. The fact that he has to do that shows you that this is not like a classic tanai, and that it is only in conjunction with the underlying din that a baal has a right to be made for the nedarim of his wife. The only question is, when? When does that start? So all that Rabbi Lezer says is that once you have mizonot in the picture, those mizonot actually pull up the beginning of that din of hafarav the Baal, because of the fact that a woman takes her nedarim, posing that her husband will have a right of refusal. And so basically what Rabbi Pinchas is explaining is that they're extending the din d'oraita of hafara to an earlier point in time, which is the point in time where he starts to give her mizonot, even though nisuin has yet to take place. On the other hand, when he does this with his friend in mind, aldat chaveiro, there's no underlying din d'oraita that you're connecting that to, and therefore it doesn't work as hafara. Now, if he explicitly states it as a t'nai, then of course it would work, even according to the Ran. And from Soloveitchik, the Mishimot Shiurim says that actually explains why the Baal's rights of hafara are limited to nidarim of inui nefesh and nidarim of beino de beina. Because if the premise of the Gzeret HaKatuv that grants the Baal the right of hafara includes in it or supposes Rav Pinchas' din, which is that when a woman takes a neder, she has her husband's approval or right of refusal in mind. So that would only be true with regards to nidarim that are relevant to her husband, which are nidarim of inui nefesh and nidarim of beino de beina. And then when you're dealing with nidarim that have no relationship to the husband, then there's no embedded veto right that the woman is granting to her husband in that case. And therefore, the hafara, or the gzeret ha-ketuv hafara, is not relevant. And that's the chiddush really here of Rabbi Eliezer, which is that the right of hafara is not connected directly to nisuin, or the consummation of the marriage, but rather to the establishment of the point where she is deemed to be beit isha. And what he says is that once the husband starts to support her and give her mizunot, that already deems her to be Beit Isha, and she starts at that point to take Nidarim with her husband's right of refusal in mind because of the nature of the fact that he is providing her a Mizonot. Alright, so we're going to stop over here by the end of the Gemara on Ayin Gimel Amud Bet.